podcast for heroes in the world of Overwatch. This is The Payload.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Payload. We are on episode number 28. Welcome to the show. We are an Overwatch podcast from blizzpro.com. I am John Horstman from Denver, Colorado. With me, of course, is the crew. First, from Ventura, California, it is Jimmy Bloxham. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, in about 2 weeks, you're going to have to change that city as I'm moving very, very soon.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, just a couple cities away, so nothing too crazy, but yeah, life changes and stuff happening, all sorts of craziness.
Nice.
Unfortunately, that's kind of eaten in my Overwatch time quite a bit, so I haven't really had a chance to play, but there's a lot to talk about this week, obviously, and I'm really excited to start digging into it.
There is a lot to talk about, but before we jump in, let's also say hello to our native Canadian, Kevin Hovdestad. Hey, Kev.
How's it going, John? Good to be here. Jimmy, where are you going? What's happening? You got a new job or what's going on, man?
Not a new job, just a new place where I'm staying. So
change of scenery. I like it.
Yeah. You know how that is. I think you just recently had a change too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Not as big, but yeah. I mean, if you go back and you watch through some of the previous shows, you can probably see that I switched it up a little bit. The background changed. So did John. John just moved not too long
ago
here, too.
Thank you. Dang, I just had to be like pointing at myself like, me too, guys. We've all moved.
Yeah, I mean, you can
see like, better.
The boxes in the background and everything, I think. But nice. Yeah, it's happening.
That's awesome. All right. Well,
no, the nice thing about it, though, really quickly, is I'll be able to retool my setup and really get it a little bit better than what I have right now.
So I have no idea nice. What you mean by that. I never change my setup. This is always static.
John's using the exact same stuff he's been using since day one. Over a year ago.
I give these other guys heart attacks because every week I'm trying something different or move something or rearrange or like all these different things. And we did it again today. So we're trying a new look on this week. If you're hanging out for the video show, let us know what you think. But yeah, let's talk about some Overwatch. Man, I'm so used to saying
close.
That. It's tough,
close.
Man. I'm not used to doing two podcasts. Let's talk about some Overwatch this week. Did you guys get to play much? Jimmy, are you up to 25, ready to go for competitive mode?
Yes, I am up to level 31, so I will be ready for a competitive mode when that comes out. The house I'm currently in was tented earlier this week, so I was completely out of the house most of the week. So I haven't played really any Overwatch in the past few days at least. But yeah, I'm really excited for stuff coming to the game and competitive finally being released.
Nice. What about you, Kev? You get some Overwatch in this week?
Yeah, not as much as I would have liked because I've been actually playing a ton of heroes. And it also doesn't help that I keep splitting between the two platforms, right? So I'm at like 23 on PC and like 19 or something on Xbox. So I'm just going to have to push my way through and get them both done, right? But I think it'll be good. Like, I think it's going to be really solid to have the option to play competitive on both. Because like I've said before, and I'll keep saying, they're so different, right? The game just plays so wildly differently on the two platforms. And I like being able to kind of jump on PC and feel like sniping is really relevant and then jump on Xbox and feel that, like, you know, AoE
Torbjorn is OP.
I maintain, like, I spend most of my time on console now on Lucio. It makes the biggest difference in my mind.
It's so easy to play Lucio on console. I feel like it's really simple, but yeah, I mean, like you were saying, both the platforms are totally different. I mean, just watching the plays of the game, like I see all these Pharah play of the games on like console and none of them are like in the air, like scouting out.
It's so funny.
The people from behind. They're just like on the ground doing their old
ground.
It's weird.
Yeah. They're ground.
It's so weird.
They're still in Warlords of Draenor. They haven't done their achievement yet.
Oh man. Ouch.
See, and I see totally the opposite. I see Farah just holding down left trigger on Xbox to kind of like do the slow fall as the fuel keeps running out. It's just so like so predictable because they just want to be as high as they can for as long as they can with no regard for the consequences. It's hilarious.
I love it. I love playing on console. It's my home. I'm up to 25 on both, so I'll be able to jump right into competitive mode. And you know I will. And I know a lot of you guys are going, competitive mode? What do you mean? Competitive mode? Competitive mode? We're going to talk about it in just a sec. Before we do, next week, we will have Icarus. He is one of the lead creators of the Hero Meta Report that we reference almost every week. And he also makes awesome YouTube content. And he's got a beautiful accent. He's going to put Kevin to shame. He's our resident accent guy. Canadian.
What accent?
Come Canadian. Just say a boat, hockey, things like that. Yeah.
Somebody talk about hockey on the roof.
There it is. See, there it is. So he's going to be on. Anyways, Icarus is going to be on the show next week. So tune in. We're going to talk about some competitive Overwatch and what's coming up next. Let's go to the news.
This week in Overwatch.
Man, we moved really quick this last week. We went from like 0 to 60 for some new stuff. So last week we might have touched on it. There was rumors going around, or Jeff Kaplan made a post alluding to they're thinking about doing a PTR, and we have a PTR. So we have a public test realm up. All you have to do to participate is restart battle.net if you haven't, open Overwatch, and then in your region choose PTR, and basically your account will be transferred all over, including your current progression items and info. For the most part, there can be some time delay stuff, but for the most part, a fairly accurate snapshot of your account. Progression obviously does not transfer back to the live games, so you're just in the playground. Nothing you do there is permanent, and of course, real money purchases are going to be disabled. On the PTR, though, we've got competitive mode version 2.0, I guess we would call it. Competitive mode version 2.0. Let's jump into it. Kev, how does competitive mode work?
How does competitive mode work? Basically, it's very similar to how things worked on beta in terms of getting into it. You have to have your account up to level 25, which is why we've been referencing that breakpoint so much. Once you're in, it'll feel very similar to if you've played any of Blizzard's other ladder systems, whether that's StarCraft, Heroes of the Storm, otherwise. You'll do 10 placement matches. During those placements, your MMR is a little bit more volatile, so it'll move a little more aggressively. You'll be able to get a better sense of where you belong skill-wise, because if you win, you're going to get placed against people who are suddenly dramatically better. And if you lose, you'll be placed against people who are suddenly dramatically worse. They're basically going to make you run the whole gamut from amateur to pro and figure out kind of where do you belong in that mix. When you're done those 10 placement matches, you'll be assigned a matchmaking rating that correlates directly one-to-one to a skill rating, and you're going to try and play games for the remainder of a 2.5 month season. Basically, they're going to do it quarterly, 4 seasons per year, to try and move that skill rating up over the course of the season. As you play through, you'll also earn points that can be spent on new unlocks, whether that's sprays, icons, golden weapons, which have been introduced, and you can look those images up online. I think everybody just wants the golden Reinhardt hammer is really all anyone is after. There are way more significant lever penalties. So this is something that I think we all kind of talked about, and we were in some ways frustrated with the way that leaving and joining games has worked for Quick Match, because they've really built the whole game around that kind of drop in, drop out feel. But for competitive, that's not how it's going to work at all. If you leave early, you're going to actually take major penalties to your account, likely preventing you from continuing to compete in competitive until you've sort of played a few games and demonstrated that you're not going to leave them. If you do it too much, you will actually be removed from competitive for those multiple infractions. It's unclear if that's a permanent thing or just like per season. We don't have 100% of those details yet, but I expect we'll have them in the next week or so when competitive launches, because they want it out before the end of the month.
Jimmy, so obviously this is a very competitive mode. Do you think they're doing it right? Do you think that they've hit the right balance of this is serious, you can't leave, you can't dink around with five Torbjorns, and this is not the place for that. Do you like the current iteration of competitive mode?
I like it so far. It's still going to have some iterations. I know we're going to go through some of this, especially with the sudden death stuff. I really like the way they're having the skill rating just be 1 to 100, and that can just really fluctuate. I mean, it's a more, I feel like, direct rating than something like Hearthstone has, where you're going through these ranks. But it really... It should, as the season goes on, really let you compare yourself to your friends and whoever else is playing. And I really like that. It's just a very simple, like, oh, I'm 50, you're 45, you're slightly less better, like less good than me right. at the game. But it's going to be really interesting. And what I really like, though, is that everyone's skill rating and the team average will be visible before the game starts. Yes. So you're seeing visibly how the system is working. And another thing, though, that they did talk about in the developer update about competitive mode, which if you haven't seen that, you've got to check it out. It's really detailed. I absolutely love how they broke it down. They're finding the current format, sudden death happens 35 to 50% of the time, and they really would like to try to get that lower. But I do like how they did decide to resolve sudden death here. It's going to resolve on the map slash game type that you're currently playing on. So you'll just play the same one you just played. So maybe you'll learn something about your opponent and can play a little bit better the next time. Kevin, do you want to talk about scoring a little bit? I know it's a little complex, but I really like how they've the direction they've gone for this.
Well, okay, before we move away from this, I think there's a couple things we should let people know. One, the sudden death thing is under review, and in the updated versions of this, they're trying to bring that number down so that it's more like 1 in 10 games maybe will end in sudden death, which I think is great. I think that's a good balance to strike. It's also worth noting that the entire process right now is 100% dynamic queue. So there is no separate ladder, right, for people who are going in as organized groups of six or coordinating in any other way. You get one skill rating, and that one skill rating is tied to every game you play in competitive. So there is talk, I think, in the community down the road that we might want to see a separate space for people who are playing in full groups, as opposed to, you know, the three of us go in and we want to mess around in competitive and try to skill up, and we get, you know, three other random people that we don't know. We're going to be at a disadvantage against six people who are, you know, pre-organized on voice comms. Like, there's definitely going to, I think, be the sense that there's going to be an advantage to queuing in a larger group for competitive. So that's something that maybe needs to be addressed down the road. John, what did I miss?
I mean, I think you hit all the big things. One thing too that Jeff Kaplan has already said is people have not been very happy with the coin flip at the end for sudden death. So basically how it works is, as Jimmy was saying, you're playing on the same map that you started on, but they basically flip a coin if you're on defense or offense, attacking or defending. And people haven't really been too happy with that. So it's going to stay this way this season, which I love. Jeff Kaplan's just like, hey, we heard you. We don't think it's the best thing, but we need to keep it the way it is right now. It's just, there's not enough time to change it. So first season's going to be there, and we want your feedback all the way through. And these first couple seasons especially are probably going to be really dynamic to change. That was the only thing I was going to add. And then let's talk scoring system.
Yeah, so scoring. The way that scoring works is different per game mode. When you play Assault, you get a point for the first capture point, it's 2 points for the second capture point. And right now, like John said, sudden death will be a coin flip for who gets attack defend. In payload, it's 1 point per checkpoint up to a total of three. Sudden death gets that same coin flip, and control point is just best 3 out of 5. So it's not really all that dissimilar to what you're experiencing for play right now, with the notable exception that if both teams are defeated, if they fail to push all the way through, whether in assault or payload, they're going to be getting points for how successful they were along the way. So there is still value, for example, in pushing the second checkpoint on a payload map and not going, it doesn't matter, we can't win, call it a day. Like, there's still point scoring value, which makes a lot of sense, I think, for a competitive scene. And they've done something where they're going to have a play of the match instead of a play of the game, which I think is kind of interesting. Jimmy, thoughts on this?
I really like the scoring so far. I mean, it's kind of a hybrid of what everyone's been kind of wanting, I think. And obviously it's not stopwatch, thank God. But I think having point values for each checkpoint is really cool here. And I really do like that the assault one, the first point is one and the second is two. Because generally how those maps are designed is the second one is a bit tougher for the attacking team to generally be winning on. The play of the game versus play of the match thing is going to be interesting. I really like that they're looking at that as well.
JR posted, you see JR posted his Lucio play of the match and called it play of the match. And there was somebody in YouTube who lit him up like, what kind of noob are you, Blizz Pro? You're not very pro. It's play the game, not play the match. And then the Blizz Pro account's just like, you're out of date, dude. It's just like, come on, guys. New terminology, play the match. Oh, I like it.
I think what's most interesting, though, is the control point mode being best 3 out of 5. Right now it's best 2 out of 3. So I'm wondering how that map rotation will work. What they have right now.
They did reduce the timer, right? Maps? Because they did reduce the timer from 5 minutes to 4 minutes on those rounds. So even though it's going 3 out of 5, those rounds are...
I might be thinking a different mode.
No, you're right. Totally, it's just John's correct. They did tweak the timers a little bit. And I think the intent there is basically if one team gets a dominant lead early on a control point map, it can be very difficult to displace them. And they really want to reward people for, you know, the skirmishes more than we set up a more effective defense because we took the first fight correctly. Right. So it's going to hopefully mean that you've got shorter rounds. People are going to be contesting a little more, and it really will re-emphasize that initial engagement to take the point as opposed to which team is holding people off of it and which team is trying to break in. Because breaking in is obviously more difficult.
Yeah. So my question is, I don't know if anyone here has played PTR and seen this yet, but on control point, since it's best 3 out of 5, does that mean if it goes all 5 rounds, you're playing two maps twice?
I have to assume so. Yeah. I haven't actually had a chance to do it. I haven't been on the PTR yet, but I assume as much.
That's why I'm assuming too, but that's cool. I think that's really, really, a good compromise and definitely a nice way of, extending out the mode from, how short it can be in a quick match here.
Well, it's just not enough. Right. There's a 2 out of 3 match. I know personally, I've felt that at the end of a 2 out of 3, I don't fully feel like we've resolved who's the better team. Hopefully 3 out of 5 will help resolve that a bit with potentially up to 5 rounds. You should hopefully have a clear winner, a clear loser. And so I think that makes a lot of sense. Something too is they did reduce the sudden death timer as well from 2 minutes to 1:45. So they're trying to speed the game up even more, which is something interesting because Overwatch is already such a fast game. Kev, do you like the speed changes we're seeing so far in competitive mode? Well, in just Overwatch in general.
Yeah, I think we're just going to need time to play with it, right? Like, I think this is the sort of thing where that's a very simple dial to turn from one season to the next season, right? They may decide after a season that they want to give people the extra 30 seconds, and it maybe varies by game mode or map, or heaven forbid that maybe they have to tweak it when they introduce new maps or new characters, right? Like, the game is just going to continue to evolve, and I really actually am very thankful for the fact that they just keep making these aggressive changes. They don't ever feel like they're just committed to, yes, this is how it works, this is what we built, take it or leave it, and then we have to play with it for 2 years before we get them coming back and saying, you know what, yeah, let's mix things up a little bit. Like, they're being very honest and forthright and saying, this is just gonna, it's a living, breathing thing, it's very organic, and we're gonna make it the best we can, which means get used to things changing on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis.
Something I also really like, too, is they've already started talking about, okay, we don't totally love sudden death. Here's already some ways that we're thinking about changing it. One change they're looking at doing is for payload maps. If you have time left over at the end of the round, if you go into sudden death, you and the opposite team have the time left over to see who can take the payload the farthest in that time. So it does reward speed to a point, but only if both teams bring the payload all the way to the end both times. So I just love King Kaplan is just the best of just being super transparent. And I do think overall the community is being really mature about it. And when Jeff Kaplan says something that we don't necessarily want to hear, the community has enough whereabouts to go, okay, I don't like that, but I thank you for telling me and telling me your reasons behind it. He's super transparent with the whys, why they're making a change, why they can't make a change as soon as they want to. I've just really appreciated that. I think so far the Overwatch team has really nailed how to communicate with their community. At the same time, a lot of that is tentative on the community remaining civil through it all. Otherwise, before you know it, we'll have a Warcraft devs Twitter, and we might not hear from them in quite some time. So thank you. Feedback for Jeff Kaplan, because we know he listens to the show all the time, I'm sure. We appreciate all the info you give us and give us content to talk about every week. What else?
The goal's good, peeps.
what else do we need to hit here? Do we hit all the stuff with competitive mode? I mean,
unless there's something you guys want to talk about that you feel like is missing from it in some way, I think it's just, I want to play with it. Like, I want to get it hands on in a live environment with real people and see how it goes. I expect that, like, my number one piece of feedback is still going to be, they probably need to do like a team league type thing for people who are queuing as organized groups, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Right.
Sure. Jimmy, after the show, you and me, cause Kevin's going to have to ditch, we'll play some competitive mode. So we have something to talk about next week.
Okay.
Deal.
Let's do it.
All right. So really quickly in some esports news. So Gregory, the number one Zarya player in the world. This is pretty interesting. Basically, a 17-year-old female gamer from South Korea. She's had just amazing, dominating appearances, like head and shoulders above the competition, taking down some really big names in these tournaments. Two pros even went as far to say that they would bet their career that she's hacking.
Why would you do that?
I know.
That?
I don't get it.
How stupid are you?
So they bet their careers. I have no idea if they're following up on that, but Blizzard did an investigation, cleared her of that, said she's not cheating, she's not hacking. And then to go above and beyond, she actually went and played on stage where you could see her play and the mouse and everything. And she's just, holy crap, like a young me back in the day, in the Halo days, you know, just headshot after headshot. She's Zarya. Her Zarya is amazing. She's so good.
The video they posted was her playing Zarya. And honestly, like, absurd. I had no idea that Zarya had that kind of potential. And the next thing I did was like cue the game up. Like, I want to go mess with this Zarya character, because I had no idea that there was that kind of power available. And that's not how the character is. That's her. So just to be clear, I did not pull off the sort of maneuvers that she was.
And it's kind of cool too that Blizzard is being really quick, just like they're being really quick with bans and stuff like that. They're also pretty quick with, nope, they're good. Lay off, guys. Don't, you know, play nice.
Yeah, I did want to interject really quickly, somewhat related. Blizzard was talking about, I think it was Jeff Kaplan was talking about how they've had a lot of silent updates to the game, and they actually removed, what was it, the avoid player option. because they saw it being basically abused. And one of the best one of the best Widowmakers in the game was getting these just abnormally long queue times, and then they realized that literally hundreds of people had clicked avoid this player just because that player was super good. So
yeah, it wasn't avoid this person who's being mean, it's avoid this person who beat me.
Yeah, so that's out of the game. That was I've seen just in the client all sorts of small updates that don't have patch notes all the time, I feel like, which is good to know that they're just continuing to update the game, and not a surprise, but very interesting that they removed that feature from the game, at least for now. I mean, obviously they can go back and revisit this and improve it in such a way that it is easily exploitable like that.
I mean, I don't think it was necessarily an exploit as much as an oversight on the Overwatch team as far as how much it can affect a player's queue experience. But they were even saying too, to make it worse, right? Because he was taking so long, you get match made into like way lower MMRs.
He was way better than
so him, it just perpetuated the fact that people wanted to ignore him. He's like way above and beyond where he should be. Oh, that was really funny. Really funny show. Story.
I mean, in theory, right, it's a great idea. You know, instead of me having to report somebody for bad language or being a dick, I can just, you know, no, I don't want to play with that person anymore, and problem solved. But that's once you put that system out into the environment, obviously people figured out that they could say, I don't want to play against people who play Genji, and just start avoiding everyone who plays Genji. And soon enough, you stop seeing Genji. Like, it just, and it became this weird, like, social engineering problem instead of like I just don't want to play with the people who call me names. And I think it's too bad in a way, because it was a great system in the sense that it would limit the amount of work Blizzard would have to do investigating reports of people being abusive in game. It would have been a little more hands off for them, which would have been just less work to moderate. And this system is great, but you know, when somebody starts doing what they did with it now, we're kind of hung with the alternative, which is it's all got to go back to a customer service driven, manually reviewed process. So you are going to end up seeing some of these people that you don't want to play with until Blizzard catches up to them.
Sure. Whew, man, we blew right through that. I thought that the patch notes, or not patch, but the PTR and competitive mode was going to take way longer than that. But kudos to us, staying on point, got through all that. Should we get to the big shindig for the show? Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Faster than sight. So predictable.
Woo! I love it. All right, so this week what we really wanted to do with competitive mode right around the corner for console players and on the PTR for PC players, we wanted to talk a little bit about hardware, settings, software. We get a lot of questions. There's a lot of information out there. We wanted to bring it all into a nice central place so that especially for our audio listeners who don't maybe frequent videos all the time or read long articles, have a place to go to get an idea about what mouse should I look for, what kind of headphones are best, what are my settings, how do the pros use these settings. And so that's what we're going to do today. Props, Jimmy. This is a really good idea. This is Jimmy's idea. Send him props. I think it was a really good one. So basically what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about hardware, talk a little bit about software, and talk about settings. And let's go ahead and just start down the list. Mice. Kevin, you play a lot of games. I feel like you'd be a really good guy to talk about what with a mouse. What am I looking for? What is the best mouse for me for Overwatch? And I want to put an asterisk next to everything and say, this is min-maxing stuff here. If you have a regular Dell mouse, you can play Overwatch and you can be really good at Overwatch. But if you're like, hey, I'm going to go get a new mouse today, and I'm going to spend $100 or $80 or $60. And there's things that you want to be looking for. This is it. All right, Kev, sorry, go.
All right. So mice, I mean, mice is a tricky one, right? Because it's a very personal thing. It's probably the most like customizable piece of hardware that's going to be a part of your gaming experience. You know, you buy a monitor, you're not doing a lot of like tweaking it or like adding or removing weights from it. It's just a monitor. So with mice in specific, the two major factors, the things you really want to pay attention to is you want mice that do not use built-in hardware acceleration of any kind or any type of prediction or snapping. So what you'll find with mice that have been built for sort of the lowest common denominator to be used on like plain old fashioned Windows workstations in the computer lab on campus or whatever, is that they actually have a level of correction built into them to help people draw straight lines when they're working on math problems or whatever, which is lovely in a environment where you don't care about pixel precision, but awful for anybody who's an artist or a gamer or really cares about being able to make those discrete movements and have finesse when they're moving things around. Almost all gaming mice are going to be able to solve this problem for you. So in general, if you're buying any mouse that comes from one of the major gaming brands, you know, your Razer, your SteelSeries, your Logitech, your Zoe, the list goes on, obviously, you're probably going to be okay. I went through and did some digging just to double check on that. And almost all of the major mouse manufacturers now are using, it used to be, if you go back a couple of years, you basically had to buy one of about three mice that were on the market to get a sensor that was flawless in terms of having no built-in acceleration or prediction. Now, the company who made that sensor was being approached by every manufacturer desperately trying to get that sensor. They were bought out by a parent company. So Avago was the original sensor manufacturer. They now belong to PixArt. That sensor, you'll find it branded as Avago or PixArt because they left the old ones branded the same way as they used to be, is in basically, it's the core of almost every mouse. Hilariously, like whatever you decide you like for aesthetic, color, size, weight, braided cord, take your pick. The mouse is probably just the shell built around that same core sensor. Other things worth, you know, doubling down on since we're having this conversation, always wired. You always want to have a wired mouse as opposed to using wireless just for risks of interference or delay, and as high a polling rate as you can get on USB. Mice can be polled 1,000 times at 1,000 hertz, right? 1,000 times per second, which is way higher than the traditional polling rate on like a PS2 mouse, which I think is 250 hertz, or the base polling rate for standard USB mice is 250 hertz. So it's something to keep an eye on. It'll be on the package. I don't think we're recommending a particular mouse. Just, you know, do your research and find those features.
Yeah. And speaking of research, I just highly recommend if you're able to find a retail location that has kind of the mice out. I mean, obviously you won't necessarily be able to play a game with them, but you'll get to feel them. And you just want to find a mouse that really feels right for you. And I think weight of the mouse is actually something that's very particular. I mean, everyone has their own preference. I got the Razer Mamba Tournament Edition. It's a little bit on the heavy side as far as mice, and I really like it. It works well for me. But I was talking with Nibs on Twitter. We were all talking about mice stuff, and he's like, "Yeah, it's a nice mouse. It's just too heavy for me." So he gets the Razer Death Adder, whichever the new one is, because it's like a little bit lighter and it's a little bit easier to move across the mouse mat and stuff like that. So it's just a lot of I feel like trial and error, and if you're comfortable with a certain brand, go with that brand. Whatever makes you comfortable playing the game really is kind of what you want.
Jimmy, we have the same mouse high five.
Oh my goodness,
get a room, YouTube. My five. God. Psh.
No, mouse high five. Anyways, whatever. Okay,
get a mouse room.
Sorry.
nice, good job. Next up probably would be keyboard. So talking about the keyboard, I will do that. I like keyboards. I know Kevin's a big keyboard guy too. What a surprise. But I'll get the layman stuff out of the way, and then Kevin can get real in depth. I also have that same, we have the same one. You have the Black Widow Tournament Edition.
Yeah. The Black Widow Chroma Tournament Edition.
Yep. Dang it,
oh,
Jimmy.
Oh my goodness.
We just like our stuff to look good. You know? We just like it to look good. I know it's not the best, but it looks good, and I'm just...
Yeah, I just love the 10 keyless. I love the 10 keyless design. Just to get less, make it have less space on the desk is really nice.
Yeah. Anyways, when you're looking at a, sorry, I didn't mean to like cut it off and move on. That was a jerk move, but I was just continue. Moving on. I was just continuing. Basically, mechanical preferable. Low action means lower latency. So the farther you have to press the button, typically the longer it takes to get to the person because you're having to push down farther and duh, physics kind of. Most gaming keyboards have kind of all this mechanical, pretty low response time type stuff. Avoid Bluetooth again. It has pretty high latency. I used to play WoW with my, I used to be on a Mac all the time, and I used to save my Bluetooth keyboard. And once I went mechanical, never again, never again. And so, yeah, Kevin, what else? Sorry, Jimmy.
I just want to say real quick, it was really funny just how mechanical keyboards kind of came back into style. I feel like it was right around when StarCraft 2 really became big, like they started, everyone started making them, and now they're like a dime a dozen. You can find a mechanical keyboard pretty much from any manufacturer right now. It's crazy.
What do we miss,
Kev? So, I mean, nothing major. Mechanical keyboards, like Jimmy said, have made a big comeback. The reason people like them for gaming is because on a traditional keyboard, so if you've got, again, like that standard piece of junk plastic keyboard that you found, you know, hooked up to the HP lab computer at school, it's got just a single membrane, and that single membrane calculates all of the button presses when you push down on a key. That doesn't give you the same level of control or discrete signal that a mechanical keyboard does, because in a mechanical keyboard, underneath every key is actually a physical switch, right? A mechanical switch. That's why they're called mechanical keyboards. Those switches are independent, and each one can be replaced separately. It's all modular. If you ever want to get really fancy, you can get in there and you can replace keycaps, switches, all sorts of parts. My keyboard is this insane Frankenstein of like there's nothing original. The only original part of my keyboard is the particle or the PCB, the control board underneath. Everything else is totally a new part that I added myself.
I know this is gonna suck for the audio listeners. Is it possible, are you on too short of a thing to throw it up on the camera really quick? That's sexy. Yeah, that's a Jimmy Bloxham keyboard right there. If Jimmy Bloxham was a keyboard, you'd be that keyboard.
That, I actually have the same color keycaps on the keyboard I use at work.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're really, really wanting to dig into mechanical keyboards and really customize it and gain just what you want out of it, check out the subreddit on Reddit. Obviously, our mechanical keyboards, they're... I have some serious keyboard envy browsing that, but there's some really cool stuff you can check out there.
Yeah. Anyway, so the lessons to learn here, real brief, are when you get a mechanical keyboard, there are different types of actual switches underneath the keys. Most of them are made by one manufacturer called Cherry. There are a handful of companies out there making their own switches. Companies like Razer are trying to dabble in that. But generally, if you can, you want to find a keyboard that has those Cherry switches because they're the most common, easiest to replace. And then you can do whatever you want as far as swapping. Once you're on a Cherry board, you've got lots of options, lots of manufacturers to choose from. The types of switches have two major features. They're either tactile or non-tactile, which means that as you depress the key, it'll have a little bump halfway that actually is a physical indication that the signal has been sent, which occurs technically before you've pressed the key all the way down. And then the amount of resistance. So the amount of resistance, to John's point from earlier, some people for gaming purposes prefer a stiffer key so that then they're mashing on keys, they're not accidentally pressing them. If you get a key that has too little resistance on the switch, you can find yourself like you're just resting your hand on your QEW, getting ready to move or whatever, or your, you know, WASD, and you accidentally start pushing keys down because there's not enough resistance on the switch. So for myself, my keyboard has Cherry Black switches in them. They're linear, so there's none of that bump nonsense halfway down. I can just nail those keys right down. And they have the most resistance possible, so I don't accidentally press things I don't mean to.
That's why it's so loud.
No, the loud ones are the ones that are tactile. Those are the ones that make all the excess noise.
No way.
Because they actually have a physical little clicky thing in them.
Then you just type way too loud. Stop it.
I do. I just, lots of noise when I do that. Stop it. Okay, last thing. If you really dig into this, you'll learn about N-key rollover, or NKRO. What that means is, and it doesn't really matter for FPS, but you'll see this talked about for gaming keyboards, is on gaming keyboards that send their signals via USB, there is actually a limit to the number of signals that can be sent simultaneously, because they are now all independent, right? They're all individual switches that have to send a separate electrical signal. That limit, I think, is 5 on USB 2. It might be 10 on USB 3. But there is such a thing as a no limit, right? Rollover, where every key that's pressed is being calculated simultaneously. So you can hit Control Alt Delete F1 QZ F1 all at once, and all those signals will get sent because all of them are being processed independently. That's only possible if you have your keyboard hooked up to an old school serial port, a PS2 port. Lots of motherboards don't even have them anymore, or they've got one and it's the joint PS2 port and you're supposed to use it for one of your mouse or your keyboard. If you're really, really serious, you might want to consider getting a PS2 adapter and plugging your keyboard in as a PS2 keyboard. That comes with its own set of limitations. You can't like unplug it and plug it back in when you're using your computer, because the serial port will stop responding. Like, there's lots of weirdness about getting really heavy into this stuff. Generally speaking, probably not a big deal. In FPS, you're very rarely pushing more than 2 or 3 keys at the same time, and you'll be totally fine.
Cool. Mouse pad. Get a big one.
Pick something that's consistent in its surface and probably color. If you're really serious, there's lots of these mice now. Like, I use a Logitech G502, and it actually has a surface calibration tool. So I can mouse around on the surface, and it actually learns what the consistency is for the purposes of calculating the reflection from the optical sensor. That's, again, probably more than the average person needs to do. Just put your mouse on something that's not glass.
I have a Firefly Chroma to match my other Chromas.
Of course. Yay. You do.
It all matches my setup. It may fabulous. Not be. It may fabulous. Not be the most like technically correct way to play video games, but damn but it, pretty. when you go to r/ battle stations, I'll be right there at the top because it looks good.
You,
all right.
You throw up the equalizer on the Chroma stuff and play some music real loud.
No. I have them all just pulsing. At the same color, at the same time. It looks great.
There you go.
I just feel complete. I don't have all this mismatched gear, which is a big reason why I went Razer, is I know I'm going to get relatively decent. I would say really great, but there's a lot of back and forth.
Don't ever mention Razer on the mechanical keyboard subreddit. You'll get absolutely obliterated. They right. absolutely hate just, Razer stuff. It's yeah. so funny.
Like, just I know, how much they hate Razer. I know technically and mechanically there are better options out there, but I value aesthetics. I think a computer that looks great is really important. It's an important thing to me, so I like that. Moving on, monitors.
Before we jump off this entirely, to that point as well, if you're the kind of person who wants to see, like, for example, Overwatch become an esport, if there's teams you know that are fielding Overwatch teams and they're sponsored by hardware companies, there's nothing wrong with looking at those things and maybe factoring that into your decision. And if you're kind of like, well, all these mechanical keyboards are nice, which one do I want to buy? If, you know, a team you love is sponsored by Razer, buy the Razer keyboard and then shoot them an email or a tweet that says, hey, thanks for sponsoring this team. I bought your stuff because of it. Like, that's important. That's why these companies are spending money sponsoring esports.
Tell them they should sponsor us.
Yeah. I listened to the Payload podcast and they recommended your stuff. You should give them a kickback.
Yeah. There we go. Now we're talking monitors. Let's talk monitors. Kev, Kev.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take you through it. That's fine. So monitors, there's not a whole lot to talk about here. Again, monitor technology has come so far at this point that really anything you're playing on is going to be fine. If you're in the market for a monitor, like if for some reason you're thinking about getting a second monitor or replacing one that's dying or something, there's a couple of factors you can consider for monitor purchases. At this point, higher resolution is generally better as long as your video card can handle it. So standard resolution on a regular monitor is still 1080p, same as your television, right? 1920 by 12, 1080. But if you want to get fancy, you can now get 1440p, right? 2560 by 1440, slightly higher resolution. Everything's just going to be a little bit prettier, a little bit fuller looking, a little bit more clarity as you're playing games that can render in that resolution natively. biggest things to note are, like, obviously, if you want to get heavy into the research, get out there, learn all about response times, refresh rates, panel quality, backlight bleed, like, go nuts, learn everything. But for the purposes of games, the big things to note are you want to get a monitor that is a 16:9 aspect ratio. That's a standard widescreen monitor. If you get something that's different, like an ultra widescreen or a 16:10 or anything else that's non-standard, that will actually affect your field of view in game, because games are all coded. They're hard coded to give that standard 16:9 aspect ratio. I right now am technically playing on a 16:10 and I lose a tiny bit of field of view on the side of the game because they don't want people who buy non-standard monitors to be conferred some kind of advantage. Otherwise, everyone would have to buy an ultra widescreen monitor just to be competitive, or do like a triple monitor surround setup or something, right? They don't want that. If you, again, are thinking about doing this and you've got an NVIDIA video card or something that can support it, G-Sync or any of the other vertical sync technology upgrades, awesome. FPS games, especially because you're twitching around and moving around so much, if your monitor's refresh rate doesn't line up with what your video card is sending for a signal, you'll notice horizontal screen tearing, where basically as the monitor is scanning, trying to update your picture, it gets desynced a little bit. And so the update becomes visible and you can see where it can't keep up with, you know, just spin around in a circle in Overwatch, just spin yourself around and around. And you might see this, you'll see a little break where it's not quite updating at the same speed as what your video card and your monitor should be doing. They're kind of, one is disjointed from the other. Vertical sync in game will do that, but it'll limit your refresh rate. It'll slow down. It basically limits your FPS. It hard limits your FPS, which isn't what you want. G-Sync actually does this automatically. It kind of works with your video card to process against what it is sending for signals to the monitor based on what you're doing in any full screen application. It's a super cool technology. Again, if you're shopping, you've got that video card that can support it. That's a great technology to get involved with. It's super powerful. If not, I mean, you've got a monitor with a computer, play the game. Like, you're really, unless you're super, super hardcore about having the most like photorealistic possible experience and playing at the highest possible level, a lot of this stuff is just like,
yes,
it would make the game awesome, but you don't need it.
Yeah, I think I've been really blessed with monitors, because when I do tech support for businesses, a lot of times I have them pay me in gaming computer parts,
discount parts and stuff.
So yeah. I have an XB270 and then a, oh man, what is it? I really like it. It's a Asus monitor. And it's like the VGH24. I even use it vertically. I use the XB270 for my actual gaming. And man, it's sweet. And it's got all those things. It's got the 1 millisecond latency. It's a 1440p monitor.
Well, that's probably great. Gray, that probably doesn't count, but okay.
Poor audio listeners have no idea.
Dang it. Yeah. Yep. Well, we're a clean John's show.
Yeah, exactly.
We're a clean show on audio, so I couldn't do that. I don't think I bleep out finger gestures, but if we start, you'll hear it on the show. But it is kind of a nice thing, and it's got like the G-Sync and stuff like that. Yeah
And I guess, like, if you guys have questions about this kind of stuff, if you'd like to learn more about it, feel free to email us or tweet us and say, hey, you know, we want to put together a really great Overwatch rig, what do you guys recommend? Like, this is a conversation we're really happy to have with you guys.
Oh,
because
yeah,
we're all geeking out about the game and the hardware to make it the most enjoyable, or to make you the most competitive you can be. At the end of the day, the difference between like good and great computer parts is not going to set you apart as an Overwatch player, but it can make it more fun, especially if it's like your hobby, right?
It's more enjoyable. I love it.
Yeah, I love having good stuff to play on.
I love jumping into Overwatch and seeing 220 frames per second, or jumping into WoW and seeing 150 and going, yes, I'm home. It's like you get home and you get in your battle station. You're literally making a battle station. Enjoy it when you can.
I just recently upgraded my processor from like a first gen i7 to the current i7. Oh my gosh.
Night and day, different. Right?
The dark ages. Totally night and day.
It's ridiculous. Really. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Should we talk about some settings? We're going to.
Settings
I should
are
stop
important.
Asking you guys if we should go on to the next part of the
should
show.
Yeah,
aren't you the host?
somehow, as fate would have it, All right, so settings. I'm going to make this first one really easy for you. Kevin was talking earlier with mice, how some of them have some built-in hardware acceleration and stuff like that. Well, if your mouse doesn't, Windows does. And so if you, well, you for an FPS, you don't want acceleration. Basically what it does is the faster you move your mouse, it will actually accelerate. So it's not totally accurate. So if you try to snap around, it would actually take, your mouse would travel less far to go all the way around than it would if you were going to slowly turn around. And in a game like an FPS, you want those to be the same thing. So it's always accurate. So in your Windows settings, you can turn off mouse acceleration. I actually know of a few people who play with mouse acceleration and they really like it. They're morons. Just kidding. It's a joke.
The thing about mouse acceleration. I know. The thing about mouse acceleration is you're probably, if you've got it turned on already, you're probably quite used to it. And it's probably influencing the way that you use your computer and play games already. It's worth turning it off and learning to play without it because you will actually play better. You won't get that stutter where you try to make a tiny mouse movement as a sniper and your mouse overcorrects for you on your behalf. Those sensitivity settings exist in Windows. They exist on Mac, not that it matters for Overwatch. They exist within the game itself. There's actually a slider for mouse sensitivity in the game settings. Turn all of that stuff off. It's not going to help you play. It's going to make you worse. And you can solve for all of that by having higher DPI and onboard sensitivity on your mouse, because we want that sensor to be 100% accurate to what you're doing.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. You talked about DPI. You talked a little bit about sensitivity. Bring us through. What are those things, those mythical words that are coming out of your mouth, like rainbows and unicorns?
Like rainbows and unicorns. All right. So DPI literally stands for dots per inch. And basically the higher that number is, the more distance on screen, right, the more pixels your mouse can travel as you're moving your mouse physically a certain amount of distance. So you'll probably remember if you had a computer back in like the 90s, you had a terrible little ball mouse. You had to take it apart and clean it all the time. And you had to move it, you know, move it all the way across the mouse pad, pick it up, put it back over, set it down and move it again to get all the way across your monitor when you got your first big monitor, right? That's not going to be a problem for you if you've got a high DPI mouse. And most mouse manufacturers now, the limit to DPI is what they want to set it at. There's not like a useful hardware limitation there anymore. So you're buying gaming mice now. Like my first gaming mouse, I was super duper excited to get like a 2000 DPI mouse. That was unbelievable at the time. And I paid an amount of money I don't want to talk about for it. Now, like you go buy a mouse off the shelf and they come stock at like 6,000, right? It's just the numbers are way up there because resolutions are higher, because that's the expectation, because people are working on smaller desks, the whole works. So the bigger that monitor space is, the higher your resolution is. If you've gone out and bought like a 1440p monitor, the higher you're going to want your DPI setting to be. And most of these mice, the gaming mice we were talking about earlier, are adjustable in that sense. They've got software where you can go in and you can scale that. And the application affiliated with your mouse, or in some cases, the processor on the mouse itself, will actually adjust and calculate that for you so you can tweak it to something that feels good for you.
Nice. Okay, so that's DPI. So something else that we have in Overwatch is sensitivity. So DPI is computer-based, right? It's no matter what application you're in, that's what it's functioning at by default. When you go into Overwatch, you also have a sensitivity option where you can turn that up and turn it down. So for specifically Overwatch, it's more or less sensitive than the DPI that you're actually using your mouse at in Windows or on your Mac, but you don't really get to adjust DPI quite the same way on a Mac. I'll tell you what, I know that. Anyways,
good for you.
I know. Shut up. So in there, there's sensitivity. Now, a lot of we're going to talk about some pro gamers setting for a second. Now, these guys are pros. You are probably not a pro. Kevin, are you a pro?
In Overwatch? God, no. I'm awful. Kevin I'm going to get like a 40 skill rating in this game.
Jimmy, are you a pro?
Not in the least.
So we are not pros. Just because Seagull or somebody else uses these settings doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to, but it kind of gives you an idea what to be looking for. So on a PC right now, Siegel runs a 1080p monitor. He's at 1600 DPI and he runs it at a sensitivity of 4 in the game. So that kind of gives you an idea. Typically, you find the DPI you're comfortable with and then you adjust the sensitivity. Now, there is something, once you've got some good settings, there is something that's like a mouse sensitivity test that you can do in Overwatch. Google it, type in mice sensitivity Overwatch in YouTube, and you will find a lot of great places where people have found out ways to, or not found out ways, but they found places to test their Overwatch mouse sensitivity so that it's comfortable for them. Basically, what they're doing is you're just tracking along with the bots and the practice range to find an amount that's comfortable for you. If you're tracking faster, it's too high. If you're tracking slower, your sensitivity is too low. If you're tracking right with it, it's right there and it's right good. So definitely check that out. What else are we needing to hit on for sensitivity, Kev? Jimmy?
I think it's pretty good. I'm just curious what everyone's sensitivity is set at. Mine's at 5. What do you guys have yours set at?
I'm at 1606.
You're talking about your in-game settings?
Yeah, so better than Siegel. I'm just kidding. It's not better.
Better than Siegel. You heard it here first, guys. John's going pro.
Well, and so something too, though, is if you've got a larger monitor, like I've got a 1440 monitor, your DPI is likely going to be a little bit higher because you're traveling more pixels than if you've got like a 1080p monitor. So that's also too, like if I was on a 1080p, it'd probably be around like 900 to 1000. So
yeah, I'm a swingy mouse player, so I've got my DPI set at 2400 and my in-game sensitivity at 15.
Brag. Just kidding. It's not about better or best. There's no best settings. It's whatever you're comfortable with. Last but not least, before we wrap up the show, let's talk about some graphics settings stuff. Jimmy, you feel comfortable hitting this one?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, there's a lot of options, obviously, in the game you can play with. But from what we've read and heard from the professional players, is kind of have it set to a lower medium setting. This is kind of seen a lot, I think, in StarCraft as well, just because there's a lot less visual clutter there. One of the examples is there's plants behind the first capture point on Hollywood that are just there for decoration, obviously. And this is definitely something to think about as well. I mean, you can set up your graphics settings how you want, and maybe in training mode, they're good. You're good, solid 40-50 FPS. But if you go into a match and it's a heated battle, a 6-on-6, every ultimate is going off, it might dip below 30, which is what you really want to make sure you're constantly at the very least. So what I've actually done is I've dropped my settings down a little bit, so I get around about 90 to 100 FPS just normally, and it dips to maybe 70-80 during some really hectic stuff. But the game looks gorgeous no matter what you do. And interestingly enough, though, be careful about what you set that screenshot setting at, because for funsies I set it to the highest resolution. I hit print screen and it froze my game for like 2 seconds.
That's funny.
But yeah, I'm curious what you guys think about frame rate and what settings you should really kind of play with here. I just kind of use more, I don't really fine tune it too much. I just use the kind of default high, low, medium stuff to really play around with it. I don't really go too much into the advanced settings at all.
I mean, when I'm playing, I just max them out. I would rather, for me, if I'm not playing super competitively, I'd rather just have, I love the visual color clutter. I love the shiny things. And so I want them. But if I were going to play competitively, if I were looking at joining a team or whatever, I would maybe jump those down a little bit as well. There's definitely an advantage to doing so. It's the same thing in WoW. You can see raid mechanics way clearer when you turn your graphics on low on most encounters. And so it's like, oh, that kind of stinks. I wish there was a way to make it so high or low, there's no real specific advantage, because it's kind of like, hey, here's our game. It looks amazing. But if you do that and you make it look amazing on your screen, well, you might not see that Widowmaker hanging out behind Hollywood. And so, I don't know. What do you think, Kev?
Okay, so I can give you the like technically correct answer here. Most pro players will play on low settings because they have no control over the hardware they'll play on in a tournament environment. And in a tournament environment, you're playing on hardware you haven't tested, you know nothing about, you can't guarantee you're getting a top of the line rig like the one you've got set up at home. So tournament players play on lower settings because they want to be able to make sure that when they get there and they're playing on a machine that they can't do anything about, that they're well practiced against the settings that will allow the game to run as smoothly as possible. They'll jump in and they'll mess around and they'll tweak the settings a little bit, but on a rig that they have no control over the hardware that's in it, if it doesn't run the game smoothly on high and they have to dial it down to medium, they better have been playing the game on medium and be familiar with what it's going to look like, how it's going to run, what to expect. For home use, honestly, I was the biggest proponent forever of like, go in hardcore customization, test every setting, test every combination, figure it out. Now, for most people, if you're using a decent video card, like I'm running an older video card, but I've got the NVIDIA GeForce Experience running in the background on my computer, I can go into there and it's got up to date settings and up to date drivers based on every game. And I just click the little optimize button and it says, OK, we can see what you've got for processor, memory, video cards. This is what's going to work the best. Done. And I have to do nothing. And like a couple of things I've changed where like I want to run certain games in like, you know, windowless full screen as opposed to full screen or whatever. So I tweak that. But the game settings that NVIDIA comes up with based on calculating what's going to work with your hardware are pretty much bang on for most people. I don't recommend, like, if you've got access to something like that, let it do the heavy lifting and don't futz with it beyond like maybe you decide you're going to turn vertical sync on because you like the way it looks or something. And that's good enough. Like,
yeah, it's definitely getting to the point where you don't have to stress about the settings so much anymore.
You just don't have the same level of knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to go through and figure it out and know what those terms mean
for you. And even the games, like there are some games that can go through and detect based on what you like. WoW has it, where you can just go to your recommended settings based on the rig you have. It's not perfect though. So if you're wanting to min-max that and have the best settings possible with the highest frame rate possible, you have to do some testing. Yeah. All right. We got to get out of here. It's been a heck of a show. So let's get out first. Emails. If you have questions that you want answered on the show, send us an email to thepayload@blizzpro.com. If we don't get to it on the show, I at least reply to you. So you'll at least get a reply. And the best ones are the ones that will jive best with the content that we're going to be doing. We will get it on the show. And iTunes reviews as well. We want to say thank you to Monkey Mike, or it's M-N-K-E-Y Mike. So I'm going to assume Monkey Mike. For your 5-star review, and Nicholisk, like basilisk with a Nick in front. Thank you guys so much for your 5-star reviews. We really appreciate it. Let's do some shout outs. Jimmy, you first.
Just thank you for everyone's patience with me not being able to play Overwatch as much lately. I know a lot of people have been asking me, oh, where are you? We haven't been playing Overwatch.
We're playing tonight.
Still alive. We'll play tonight. And look forward to more Overwatch in the future, obviously.
I'll stream it. I'm going to stream it tonight. Kevin, what about you?
I mean, same thing. Crazy life has kept me away. I felt bad I had to miss some shows. I felt bad that I wasn't getting as much overtime in as I wanted. It's evident from the fact that I'm not even at level 25 on either platform yet. I got some work to do, right? But we're going to get into it. We're going to get into it heavy. Make sure that we're up to speed on everything happening with competitive mode for you guys as soon as it's out. And be able to talk lots about it, stream it, bring more to the show for you. And I think that in addition to having a pretty sweet guest next week, we're starting to talk about, because we've had people asking us about it, the possibility down the road that we might open up to some crowdfunding here on the show and give people the ability to back the payload and help us out with giving you even better content and more cool stuff as the show continues to grow, because Overwatch is blowing up and we want to be right there with you.
Absolutely. As for me, same thing. Streaming at twitch.tv/kicktripod. We're actually going to do it tonight after the show. So if you want to hang out for some subpar Overwatch on the PTR, well, Jimmy and I play our placement matches, come on and do that. Yeah. Whew. Besides that, I don't know. I don't really have much else to say. Let's get out of here. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the live show. You can find us live every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at twitch.tv/blizzbro. Big thanks to Jake Buttoneau at jakebuttoneau.ca for our music and scythedesigns.com for our graphics. And of course, find us on Twitter at Payload Podcast. Email us at thepayload@blizzbro.com. Send us your iTunes reviews. We really love reading those. Lets us know we're doing something right. And if you have feedback on the show, email us at thepayload@blizzbro.com. And then find us, of course, on Stitcher, iTunes, Podcast Addicts, and the new Google Podcast. This has been episode number 28. We will see you next week. See you guys. Bye.
The Payload is a production of BlizzPro. Find out more about Overwatch at overwatch.blizzpro.com. You can find your host throughout the week on social media. Find Jimmy on Twitter at DJ Tyrant, Kevin on Twitter at Lack of Realism, and John on Twitter at Kicked Tripod.